Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 15, the Pandavas retire timely, text 21. Tadvai tanusta isha vasarato hayaste. Sohang rati nipatayo yata anumaniti. Sarvam chanena tarabuddha sad iksharictam. Basman hutam kuhaka radham evoptam. Usham. Tadvai danusta ishava savrato hayaste. Soham rati nirpatayo yata anamanti. Sarvam shanena tarabhura sarisha riktam. Basman hutam kuhaka radham evoptam usham. Tadvai danusta ishava sarato hayaste. So hung rati nirpatayo yata anamanti. Sarvam shanena tarabhura sarisha riktam. Basman hutam kuhaka radham evoptam usham. Vaishnavis.
Tadvai danusta ishava sarato hayaste.
tat,
tat.
The same.
Same.
Vai,
certainly.
Danute,
the same bow.
Ishava,
arrows.
Sa,
the very same.
Rata,
chariot.
Hayate,
the very same horses.
Sa,
aham,
I am the same Arjuna.
Rati,
the chariot fighter.
Nirpateya,
all the kings.
Yata,
whom?
Anumanti,
offered their respects.
Sarvam,
all.
Chanena,
at a moment's notice.
Tat,
all those.
Abut,
became.
Asat,
useless.
Isha,
because of the Lord.
Riktam,
being void.
Basman,
ashes.
Hutam,
offering butter.
Kuhaka
radam, money created by magical feats.
Iva,
like that.
Uptam,
sown.
Usham,
in barren land. Translation. I have the very same Gandiva bow, the same arrows, the same chariot drawn by the same horses, and I use them as the same Arjuna, to whom all the kings offered their due respects. But in the absence of Lord Krishna, all of them, at a moment's notice, have become null and void. It is exactly like offering clarified butter on ashes, accumulating money with a magic wand, or sowing seeds on barren land. Purport. As we have discussed more than once, one should not be puffed up by borrowed plumes. All energies and powers are derived from the supreme source, Lord Krishna. And they act as long as he desires and cease to function as soon as he withdraws. All electrical energies are received from the powerhouse. And as soon as the powerhouse stops supplying energy, the bulbs are of no use. In a moment's time, such energies can be generated or withdrawn by the supreme will of the Lord. Material civilization without the blessing of the Lord is child's play only. As long as the parents allow the child to play, it is all right. As soon as the parents withdraw, the child has to stop. Human civilization and all activities thereof must be dovetailed with the supreme blessing of the Lord. And without this blessing, all advancement of human civilization is like decoration on a dead body. It is said here that a dead civilization and its activities are something like clarified butter on ashes. The accumulation of money by a magic wand and the sowing of seeds in a barren land. Translation again. I have this very same Gandiva bow, the same arrows, the same chariot drawn by the same horses, and I use them as the same Arjuna, to whom all the kings offered their due respects. But in the absence of Lord Krishna, all of them, at a moment's notice, have become null and void. It is exactly like offering clarified butter on ashes, accumulating money with a magic wand, or sowing seeds on barren land. Om Ganatimadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chokshun Militang Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. This is a very poignant section of Srimad Bhagavatam. The withdrawal of Lord Krishna's associates from this world. And in fact, these events are pointing to the departure of Lord Krishna from the ordinary vision of this world. Arjuna is presenting the news to Yudhisthira in a tactful and psychologically appropriate way. The greatest calamity has happened. First, he will describe how his powers have all left him. And then he will describe the departure of the Yadu dynasty through an apparent fratricidal war amongst themselves. They annihilated each other. The events make you wonder. And indeed, that is Krishna's point. Look what can happen to Arjuna without my empowerment. The great hero of Kurukshetra, the recipient of Bhagavad Gita. Let me demonstrate to you that when I want someone to have power, they have it. And when, for the sake of my purposes, I switch that power off, watch the difference. This is Krishna educating us. Because as conditioned souls, we think we have potency and ability to be successful in material existence. You always have to present yourself as being competent, experienced, and informed. And here Krishna is showing us we're so tiny. Whatever abilities we think we have can be lost at a moment's notice. Even spiritual empowerment. So Arjuna is presenting himself as such a case. Everything looks the same. I've got the same bow. I've got the same arrows. The same chariot. Drawn by the same horses. And I am the same Arjuna to whom all the most powerful kings offered their respects. But Krishna has turned the switch off. And so I have nothing now. Everything has become null and void. So this makes you think, if Arjuna is so dependent on Krishna, and Krishna can utilize him as he likes, making him the most powerful human being, or making him powerless. This is something we hate, to be powerless. Mm-hmm. We're so afraid of being in this world without power and resources and abilities and experience and information. We're really in a psychological trauma about it. I'll do anything except be powerless and resourceless, helpless. Yet these bodies are so fragile. Just an injury to your brain and you'll act like a completely different person. Yet the world trains us to be assertive. You have to have high self-esteem. You've got to be confident of your abilities. That's the way to get ahead. Always think that you can do it. Your family should let you know that you're a special person, meant for high achievement. Choose your friends. Make sure they're the ones who are always encouraging you to go higher and higher in material achievement. Expect recognition from society. Expect that it'll come because you deserve it. Be angry if your potency is not recognized. This is how persons are raised. they have to control. Now, there's a mystery about our so-called innocent desire to enjoy. There is no question of enjoying in this world without controlling. So there you see the lie. We think, I'm just trying to enjoy, that's all. It doesn't mean I'm exploiting others or manipulating or influencing others. It's just ordinary, innocent enjoyment, the pursuit of material happiness. Living the California dream. What else can you expect of me? But Bhagavad Gita will explain that there's no question of trying for material happiness without control. That control can be very subtle. That control can be very covert, but it's still control. Even just winking your eye or moving your eyebrows. Would you like to do this? Flexing your muscles. All that is meant to accomplish something. And because you cannot enjoy without controlling, there is always a problem. Whereas Krishna's enjoyment flows without any endeavor on his part. His enjoyment doesn't depend on conditions. As soon as you try to enjoy, you have to calculate so many conditions, so many dependencies, right? How's my body? Is my body healthy? How is my mind? Am I in a good mood? Are all my senses functioning properly? Besides consulting your own body and mind to see if all the conditions are right, then you have to worry about the weather, you have to worry about the political situation, the economic situation, the finances, and then you've got to worry about those who are around you, your own associates. Are you in a good mood today? Are you able to make me happy? You haven't made me happy for quite some time now. Do you have enough money? Are you making enough money? So many worries. It's bad enough trying to just worry about yourself. But the nature of material happiness is you're always in anxiety about others. My children, will they be successful? Will my children appreciate me and remember me 20 years from now? Or will I just be history? So many dependencies, so many conditions, and we dare to call all that package enjoyment. This is our madness. It takes repeated hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam for us to finally come out of the clouds. So Arjuna is giving you his personal example. He's an eternal associate of Krishna. But Krishna is using him. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is bewildered at the start by Krishna's arrangement. He's in Maya to show us what we go through when we're in Maya. Krishna, how will I be happy by following your order? I don't see how any good can come from my fighting this battle of Kurukshetra. He goes on and on like that. Krishna is using him to show what it's like when we go through our existential crises. Oh, what is life all about? All my choices look bleak. Whether I do this, whether I do that, will I be happy? Will anyone else be happy? And then finally you just have a breakdown. Can't handle it anymore. Just like Arjuna. He dropped his bow and said, Govinda, I shall not fight. So Krishna is making a drama with him again. He switched off. Krishna switched off all Arjuna's amazing powers. Because the mission of the Lord in this world has been, it's finished. So there's no need for his personal associates to have such extraordinary powers. During Krishna's Dwarka Leela and Mathura Leela, he killed so many demons. And then through the Battle of Kurukshetra, by utilizing Arjuna and the other Pandavas as his instruments, the military burden of the world was further decreased. As Krishna told Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, Nimitta Matram, Bhavasavasachin, victory or defeat is not your concern, just be an instrument in this battle. So now the battle is over. There's no need for Arjuna to have such amazing abilities. And Krishna wants to demonstrate that without his sanction, even his personal associates lose their powers. Besides Arjuna losing his powers, you're going to hear about the Yadu dynasty, the most powerful dynasty in human existence. You're going to hear how they annihilated one another. And that will make you question. And that's one purpose of the whole pastime of the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty. So you'll start thinking, what kind of world is this? As soon as you start thinking like that, your human form of life has begun to be successful. As soon as you question, did you hear that? What happened to the Yadus? What is the purpose of this world? Why should I endeavor for material gain and material gratification when this is the end result of even personalities like the Yadu dynasty? Krishna knows you're going to think like that. Therefore, he's staging this whole show. You guys are going to think about this. Watch it. As the Acharyas explain, by the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty, Krishna is reducing the prestige of the material world. You think this world, what kind of place is this? I got to get out of here. That's the whole point. Krishna had other reasons, though. He knew that his personal entourage could not tolerate his separation. Couldn't tolerate separation from him. They were so powerful, these Yadus. If they stuck around after Krishna withdrew his physical presence from the world, that means withdrew his presence from the physical perception of this world, the Yadus would just go mad and trample the whole earth. They were so powerful. So Krishna wanted to remove them from this world so they wouldn't have to go through the agony of separation from him, and also so they wouldn't just smash everything up in madness of separation. And Krishna had other reasons, though. And this particular reason is a little complex. From one point of view, it could be said that some of the Yadus have become very familiar with Krishna. We see him all the time. We're just as good as him. He's powerful. We're powerful. From another point of view, though, the Yadus could never be offenders to Krishna. Their power was so great. How was the pastime of Krishna's presence with his entourage going to come to an end? Some of the Yadus were meant to return to the spiritual world. Some of them were demigods meant to return to their posts in the heavenly planets. How is all this going to wind up? Krishna did it in such a way that would make you think very deeply. No one on earth could defeat the Yadus. So there's no question of their leaving this world through military defeat. Now you might say, well, all right, no one could defeat the Yadus. Why couldn't Krishna take them on himself and remove them from the world in that way? But they were Krishna's own personal family. Krishna's a person, you know. He's a supreme artist. He's a supreme personality. He couldn't annihilate directly his own dynasty, and no one else could defeat them. So he skillfully arranged that they annihilate each other. Intra-family war. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur points out a very interesting reason for this whole Moshala Leela, apparent annihilation of the Yadu dynasty, of which Arjuna is just now about to present. After first describing his own loss of powers, he's going to next describe the loss of the entire Yadu dynasty. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur explains that Krishna doesn't want people thinking, he doesn't want conditioned souls thinking, that just by being born in a certain family, you're guaranteed to be on a high spiritual level. So he used his own family to show that. If you think, in other words, Krishna is saying, if you think that spiritual lineage continues just by being born in a certain family, watch this. Watch what happens to my own family. In other words, Krishna is not only annihilating his own dynasty, but he's annihilating the notion that by being born in a certain family, automatically you're spiritually advanced. And this same concept continues in Chaitanya Leela. When you look at the offspring of the Panchatattva, Lord Chaitanya, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur points out, left no children. Lord Nityananda had one son, Virabhadra, but Lord Nityananda did not recognize the children of Virabhadra. Advaita Acharya had six sons, and three of them he rejected. So both Krishna and Krishna as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are showing that by birth, there's no guarantee of spiritual succession. You read in Nectar Devotion, where Srila Prabhupada describes how his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, had such a battle with the Nityananda Vamsa, who considered that just by being born in a lineage that could trace itself back to Nityananda, just by being in that line, automatically you have a monopoly on practicing bhakti and spreading bhakti. So, of course, we don't have a problem with that concoction right now. But during the time of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, it was a hot issue. And he had to battle with this concoction. We are from this line. Bhakti is our monopoly. We teach it. We spread it. And no one else can. No one else is authorized. So here you can see why Krishna would want to show through the annihilation of his own dynasty that personal or family proximity to him is not the ultimate criterion. For us to consider the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty makes us think of our own annihilation. And naturally, because of our material conditioning, we think that since I'm doing devotional service, I should have a happy material life. We laugh at the concoction of Christianity known as prosperity religion. If you've ever heard such preachers, Jesus was no poor man. When he was born in the manger, wise men brought him gold. What else? What are some of their lines? He took your place in poverty so you could take his place in prosperity. And such preachers even announce, this is not a church, this is a multinational corporation. In other words, bring all your money. One prosperity preacher caused even more controversy by his board of directors purchasing a $65 million private jet for him. The best. And so the media was saying, well, all right, you're getting a private plane, but did it have to be the most expensive, the cream of the cream? To which his organization replied, our organization values professionalism and quality. So we laugh at that, but let's consider how much our bhakti is affected by desire for material prosperity. This is a subtle point, because it's not that by taking to bhakti, you must become poor. You must live in discomfort. You can't have a job. You can't go to school. No, that's not the point. But we have to be mindful of hoping through Krishna to make this material world a happy place. When Krishna tells you completely the opposite in Bhagavad Gita. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It's a tough pill to swallow, and it may take you decades of bhakti to process this. Temporary and miserable place? Does it have to be like that? Come on, this is California, you know? Southern California! It's not the East Coast. I was discussing with Suvas Prabhu about how I've been on the East Coast for 2 months and it's real grit there. He often tells me, although he knows I have some service I should try to do, he says, you know, your problem is you're on the wrong coast. So, can it be really true what Krishna says? Dukkhalayam is a temporary, miserable place. Or is that just, you know, bhakti extremist talk meant for the beginners, you know? What do you think? It may take you all your life to swallow this pill. We want, as Srila Prabhupada would say, we don't like that it's described as dukkhalayam. We want sukkhalayam, a place of material happiness. But then we have to consider, just like there's the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty, there's also the annihilation of our own body, our own health. Hmm. We see devotees leave their bodies in car accidents. A materialist could point out, what's the use of your bhakti? You die just like everyone else. Auto accidents, cancer. But of course, a devotee's death is completely different. A simple example given causes us to think very deeply. It's a simple example, but its purport is very deep. When the cat holds a rat in its mouth, what does the rat experience? Complete terror. But that same cat, when holding its own kitten in the mouth, what does the kitten feel? Maternal love. So from the external point of view, everything looks like a disaster. Even Stephen, devotees die, materialists die. The Yadu dynasty annihilates itself. That is all from the external point of view. But internally, the experience is completely different. So when a devotee leaves the body, it is a qualitatively completely different experience than when an ordinary person leaves the body. But you read in the media about an ordinary person leaving the body, you read, he or she died peacefully in their sleep. Well, how do you know what's going on inside? And then you hear about a devotee leaving the body in a car accident or leaving the body due to this disease or that disease. And you think, oh, how horrible. Krishna, why did you let that happen to him or her? Why? Oh. We don't know what the internal experience is. And therefore, we start shaking. Oh, you mean I practiced bhakti for so many years and then I die and I don't die peacefully in my sleep? What's the use of all this? I remember when His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was readying to depart this world. He told me personally, he said, his departure would shake up a lot of devotees because they're thinking, he gave his life to Krishna's service, he got public recognition from Srila Prabhupada, and then cancer? Dying a slow death from cancer? Hey, is this what it's all about? What's the use in giving yourself to Krishna if he's going to treat you in that way? But the fact is that this body is doomed. And we have a hard time admitting that to ourselves. Even when you're in your 60s and 70s, it's hard to believe this thing is going to end. How can it end? This is me. And if it's going to end, why can't it just like that? Why do I have to go through a whole ordeal? Or leave this body through some auto crash or something? We think, and we thank Srila Prabhupada for pointing this out, we think there's such a thing, from the material point of view, as a good death. From the material point of view, there's no such thing as a good death. But Krishna promises his devotee in Bhagavad Gita. He has Arjuna make the promise. Kauntiya pratijanihi na me bhakta pranashati. My devotee will never be vanquished. So as we pointed out yesterday, he's not referring to your material body. Your material body must be vanquished. Material situations, the material world must be vanquished. But to speak of the Yadu dynasty, even though they're Krishna's personal associates, Krishna wants to show, you can't cling to this world and enjoy. Watch this and think how the material world has lost its luster just by your hearing of the Moksha Lila. That's Krishna's plan. Spiritually, however, we're in a different universe. by the performance of devotional service, your internal life, your spiritual life, develops to a point where Krishna guarantees it will never be vanquished, your spiritual development. So that is the pride of a devotee. We can't take pride in this material body and our material situation. But we can take pride in devotional service. Thank you, Krishna, for giving me devotional service, for giving me the holy name, for giving me Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. That attachment for the processes of bhakti will never be vanquished. Indeed, as Krishna points out in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, svalpamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobayat. Just a little bit, even just a little bit of advancement in bhakti will be your eternal asset. Never vanquished. So we have to accept the material world for what it is. And that is a tough thing to do because we get attached. I want a nice body. I want nice living circumstances. Just like in New Zealand recently, the whole country was shaken up because 51 persons died in a terrorist attack. That's more than the death rate in murder and violent crimes for the whole year. So you might say, well, 51 persons at one time, that was certainly horrible, but hey, you guys are doing pretty good down there. That exceeds your violent crime rate for the whole year. But everything is relative. The people didn't take it that way. How could this happen? To their credit, within 10 days after that, they tightened up all their gun laws. But still, they were shaken. What's the world coming to? They forget that their whole country is formed geologically by volcano eruptions and earthquakes. What kind of paradise is that? But our conditioned tendency is to enjoy while we can. Have fun in the sun as long as you can. And then when the eventual disruption and distress happens, what do? You blame Krishna. How could you do this? I've got my family. How could you do this to me? How could you do this to the wife, to the children? They're undergoing some severe distress, even death. What is this bhakti that it doesn't guarantee my material success? Even it doesn't guarantee my material existence. What's the use of this? So this shows that although we're not as extreme as the prosperity Christian preachers, we still have tinges of material attachment, and we expect Krishna to fulfill our material expectations because we're devotees. This body shouldn't suffer. Our surroundings should be perfect. But Krishna is honest. He tells us in Bhagavad Gita, where you live, the material world, it's not like that. And it takes us many decades of confronting ourselves with the message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam to come out of our stupor. This is not the place for me to try and control for enjoying. It's not the place. To get to this point requires constant hearing. And it's amazing that when we act out according to our concoctions that everything should be nice. The body should be nice. All my associates should be, my family should be in perfect health, and everyone should have money, and the weather should always be good. And while we're thinking like that, and then some disruption happens, we blame Krishna. I can even catch myself when I hear some news of a devotee going through some ordeal
Oh, Krishna, she's such a wonderful devotee. Why?
And then you have to pull yourself up straight and accept the fact of what kind of world is this? We expect our political arrangements will be sane, although many people are doubting that these days, but you expect, at least in the first world, there should be political sanity, economic sanity. We take it as God-given. And then we find out. It's the same old, same thing. People exploit. People manipulate. People are dumb. People are attached to their bodies. People annihilate each other. As life in the material world. But we're not fatalists. We're just immobilized by paranoia and fear. Oh, it's hopeless. No, we are servants of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, giving the real solution. How to have real peace, how to have real prosperity. So to be effective instruments of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we have to deal with our own misconceptions that cause us to blame Krishna. I was doing service and then this happened to me. It may be easy for you to point this out to someone else, but what about when something happens to you? And then you have to review your own level of bhakti. Why am I thinking like this? Why am I resentful toward Krishna? Just as His Holiness Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was saying to me, that his departure would shake up a lot of neophyte conceptions. Wait a minute, he gave his whole life to Krishna's service. And then, that's the way you go out? You just don't fade away in your sleep one night? Shouldn't Krishna do things in that way? We have to take Krishna seriously when he explains the world that is composed of energy emanating from him. He's the expert. This is not your place for happiness. Now, that doesn't mean we can't be joyful together in bhakti, but that's a different kind of happiness. In kirtan this morning, you saw everyone joyful, dancing. This is a joyous process. It's not a joyous material process. Sorry. It's not going to happen. So we have gratitude for this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, although it seems very sobering. The Pandavas retire timely. Arjuna saying, "Where are all my powers? They're all gone." And he's about to present to you how the Yadu dynasty annihilated itself. But it causes you to relinquish your grip on the material world, your grip for controlling in order to enjoy. Meanwhile, while doing all this, Krishna is recalling all his personal associates. Either go back to the spiritual world, if you're a demigod, go back to your post in the heavenly planets, or you come with me to my next universe where we'll stage Krishna Leela again. So this is how deep Srimad Bhagavatam is. And it's amazing that we have an opportunity to hear all this and think about it. All right. Any questions?
Before I ask the question, let me make a statement that it's a very wonderful class that you've given. I'm sure everyone here is inspired to the max to want to think in terms of the way you have laid it out, that we're not the controller, we're not the enjoyer, that Krishna is in charge. So this is very, very wonderful. However, nonetheless, and I even hear this with devotees, that Krishna is all-powerful. He's omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient. He's all-powerful. The question comes, I don't ask this question, but the question comes that why would Krishna allow so many tragic things to happen to so many wonderful, godly persons when he has the power to prevent that from happening? This question even comes up in Mahabharata at the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra. A Gandhari, who's considered to be a very eminently spiritually minded woman, was very upset and very disturbed that Krishna, and these are her words, allowed Bhima to kill all her 100 sons when he could have prevented it. This is what she said. She says, "For this I am going to curse you." And she said, "In 36 years, your dynasty, just as my little dynasty of children, have perished as a result of your indifference to what Bhima did to them." He killed them, of course. "Then your dynasty will perish as a result of my curse today." And Krishna accepted this curse. He could have prevented that also if he wanted. So perhaps you can give a little explanation for this, that even an eminent spiritually minded person like Gandhari, who knew the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, nonetheless, here she was in a highly emotionally very strained, upset position where she goes and curses the very Lord whom she worships daily.
Yes, we have a human side, and it's our tendency to become overwhelmed by happiness and distress. Krishna explains to Arjuna in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita that if indeed you are affected by the comings and goings of happiness and distress, tums the tikshas for Bharata, you tolerate it. So living in this world is a lesson in toleration. We may philosophically understand through the bhakti knowledge, but still the situation grates on us. The tragedies, the catastrophes, they affect us. We have to tolerate. Bhishma Dev, in the earlier chapters in the Bhagavatam, when he was thinking of all that the Pandavas went through, he said, actually, no one can fully understand the plan of Krishna. We just accept it. At the same time, you can't make this world into a place of permanent happiness, and this is so hard for us to accept. Here's a hint. Because we are eternal spirit soul, we have this feeling that our existence, even materially, should go on and on and on and on. But that can't happen on the material platform. On the spiritual platform, as spirit soul, yes. But we kind of project the eternality of the soul onto our material existence. I just want to go on, and I wish my body would stay healthy, on, and my associates around me would be there, on, my children, my spouse, on, everything on. Forget it. It ain't going to happen. So gradually we smart up and start using all these inevitable catastrophes of the world to increase our detachment. Attachment is there in bhakti. We are attached to devotee association, attached to devotional service. That kind of attachment will do you no harm. In fact, it will do you unlimited good. I remember His Holiness Bhakti Tirthamar saying, you know, actually, it's not a big deal giving up the body. That's not the real drama. Well, look at my body. Sure, I want to get rid of it, but feeling separation from devotees. That is the real drama. So may you all have that kind of association of devotees in your families, in your temples, in your devotional communities. May you all have that kind of association that makes you think, I don't mind giving up the body, but separation from your physical presence, the physical presence of the Vaishnavas, that is the difficult thing. And of course, on the spiritual platform, through chanting Hare Krishna, we're always together. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare.
Sadhu, sadhu.